And welcome to the Fordcast,
a Harrison Ford podcast where we go through Harrison Ford's movies so you don't have to.
Yeah.
Or have to.
I'm Rachel Leishman.
I'm Lauren Milberger.
And this week, we're doing Witness.
Oh, you didn't do the little wispy thing.
What wispy thing?
I can't do it. You've done it before where you say Witness.
Witness.
There you go.
Witness. I was like, I'm trying to think, like, how I think, and I was like, okay, so what would I do? That would be weird. I was like, Witness.
I was looking forward to it.
Oh, this movie.
Do you have any personal memories of this movie?
Just watching it at the gym and being so frustrated. I mean,
I know, like, childhood, like, you
know,
I watched it
the first time as an adult.
See, I remember watching it, but I don't know how old I was, and I think I've mentioned before in the show that I actually went back before we did the show because there was like a snowstorm and there wasn't a lot to do. And I was like, oh, it's on Netflix. And I thought, oh, it's not going to be as good as I remember because I was a little kid and I didn't understand it. But it was like, it was really good.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe not so much for you.
I mean, it's a fine movie. Also, I meant to preface this. If you hear a devil sound.
Oh, yeah.
It's my sink. For some reason, our sink gets very hungry and just goes in the middle of, like, everything I'm trying to do. Intense scenes and movies, it does it. It's real fun.
So I've not heard it yet, but I'm looking forward to it.
Hopefully it happens just for Lauren yeah. to be a part of.
For me, I feel like the most personal thing about, maybe not particularly this movie, is 1985. Because I realized that my favorite movie came out in 1985, which is Clue. But also, a lot of the movies that influenced me as a child, looking back, came out in 1985. Like, it was a crazy year for movies.
Like, list me some.
Why? I'm that funny. I have a list.
I see a piece of paper.
I know.
I wasn't being facetious. Oh. I can see the paper.
Yeah. I thought you were making a little joke there.
Nope.
So, here are the movies that I couldn't believe came out that I used to watch, like, ad nauseum. Back to the Future, The Black Cauldron, The Breakfast Club, Brewster's Millions, Clue, Cocoon, The Color Purple, Daryl, which was a big movie that I think a lot of people don't know was huge for me. It reminds me a lot of some aspects of Stranger Things, actually. The Explorers, Fletch, Girls Just Want to Have Fun, Goonies, Gotcha, Jewel of the Nile, which is a sequel to, oh no, I can't think of it, but it's a sequel. The Last Dragon, The Legend of Billie Jean, The Man with One Red Shoe, Mask, and Maxie. That's confusing. Murphy's Romance, Nash Lampoon's European Vacation, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Pritzi's Honor, other movies that, like, maybe didn't mean that much to me, but, like, Silverado, I Love Spies Like Us, Turk 182, Weird Science, Young Sherlock Holmes, White Knights, and Weird Science. Oh, and Real Genius, and still other things like Purple Rose of Cairo and Desperately Seeking Susan, which I guess I also watched.
I stopped listening after you said Goonies, so I was like, yeah, good year.
It's insane. There's also Commando, which I wasn't necessarily a big fan of, Lost in America, which I saw as an adult, Out of Africa, it's St. Elmo's Fire. It was a crazy year.
That's a good year.
Yeah.
The awards season was probably insane.
Yeah.
That's my favorite thing to go back and do is look at years. And see, like, because on Hard Bodies, we just talked about Colin Firth. And we were, like, when we talked about A Single Man, we were both were like, well, who could have possibly beat him? Like, yeah. This movie's so good. And it was Jeff Bridges. And I went, oh.
That always happens. You think and you go, wait, how did this person not win? And that happened with Harrison Ford, where I went, wait, well, who was he up against? And I went back and went, oh, well, he lost to William Hurt in Kiss the Spider-Woman. This makes a lot of sense.
Well, yeah, it's sad because you, like, see, like, because it just happened, like, I, like, am watching A Single Man and I'm, like, so heartbroken, but then I remember the emotional reaction I had to Crazy Heart and I was like, oh, if I was in the Academy, I also wouldn't know.
It'd be
like,
hard.
I don't know. They're both, can we give it to both of them? Because they're two different performances and they're great.
And Colin Firth won for
The Next
King's
Year.
Speech,
the next
which
year,
is incredible and one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, it was just, and then I think he was again up against Jeff Bridges. Because Jeff Bridges then did True Grit and was up again. Here's the thing, because Jeff Bridges breaks my heart. We're recording, so you know when we're recording, it's October 12th, the day before this comes out, and it's my father's birthday, and my dad looks just like Jeff Bridges. And so anytime Jeff Bridges gets hurt in a movie, I get very upset about it. And Crazy Artie has a heart attack. It's been out for years. If you're offended, I'm sorry.
Spoiler alert
for Crazy
again,
Heart 2009. But 2009 movie Crazy Heart, he has a heart attack, and then in True Grit, I think he just gets shot. I can't remember. True Grit's super old, so if you haven't seen True Grit, that's on you. But, because it's a remake that he was nominated for. But he gets hurt in that one, too. And I just remember it was the 2 years of me being like, I need Jeff Bridges to stop.
Being hurt and...
Stop getting hurt. I was terrified watching Hell or High Water. I was like, I can't handle this. Like, please, just sit down, Jeff Bridges. But yeah, no, it's heartbreaking, but it also is very like, well... That was another great performance. Sorry, Harrison Ford. William Hurt was great.
There's also so many other factors going into being nominated and winning an Oscar. It can be your, you know, how long you've been in the industry. Like, I think a lot of people would say that as good as Scent of a Woman was and how great, Al Pacino was, he won for an overall career.
Yeah, and I mean, but then there's also the side of it that's like, okay, but what about Gary Oldman? And Harrison Ford, for that matter.
And he hasn't been nominated since.
Yeah, but there are so many actors who you're like, oh, they're great, they're incredible, and they never win. Like, Gary Oldman is, I feel like, is always like, wow, this guy's great. I think he's BAFTA. Like, he's a brilliant actor, has a bunch of awards, but then it comes to the Oscars. Like, he was nominated for Tinker Tailor or Soldier Spy. But I forget who beat him that year, but it was just kind of like, yeah, you knew Gary Oldman wasn't going to win, even though Gary Oldman
I think he's
going to
get
won.
It eventually.
Him and Harrison Ford are going to get, like, the Old Man Achievement Awards.
I don't know.
Harrison Ford before Gary Oldman.
I think Gary Oldman will probably win for performance. I think that Harrison will get it as a lifetime achievement, which is that second performance now, or not even performance, I guess, but ceremony that's not even on TV anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You can watch it online, though. Mm. Yeah. So something I'm super excited about is that we are bringing back your famous summary.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy.
Because I'm thinking that maybe not everybody knows Witness. I recommend that everybody watch along with us because it's a great movie and we're getting into the good movies now. But just in case, because it's not Indiana Jones, not Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. I do have to just, before we do that, I do have to apologize because I know it's going to make a noise on the thing. Guys, I got an email. I put it on silent now, but my email went off, and I was like, oh, no.
It's nice to know that you're paying attention to the podcast, Rachel.
I was like, oh, no, my email went off. I was, and I was like, you guys are going to hear it go, boom, boom.
You're like that person when I saw The Color Purple who put their hand over their watch when their Apple Watch went off in the middle of the show.
Yeah, because it's like, I'm so sorry. I feel like I need to call that out because it's going to go off, and you will hear it, and I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. But anyway, so my summary. It'll be quick because this movie's... Growing up in Pennsylvania, there is, because that's where, I don't claim it, but it's where I was born, there is a thing called Amish country. Amish country is very much what this movie is like. They don't have electricity, and as a small child, I was utterly confused going to Amish country, because they used to do carpentry for all of the neighboring towns.
Yeah.
And I was spoiled. So I got... a dollhouse, like a life-size dollhouse that I could play in.
A life-size dollhouse?
Like, I could play in it.
That's amazing.
It was like my mom did it so it was a replica of our house, but it was smaller, so it was like me and I could play. So it was our big house, and then our side yard would be the replica house that I had like a kitchen set and all
that
stuff.
That's super cool.
Yeah, it was fun. But the Amish made it. So watching this movie for me is super weird. Because I'm like, oh, wow.
Can you add anything like about the Amish that might be interesting to our listeners?
I mean, they're not as opposed to, like, dealing with people who deal with technology as they seem to be in this movie. Like, clearly, I remember going there as a kid to Amish country, and my mom drove the car there, and they're like, oh, hello, like, let me show you what we're working on. And it was, Amish country, especially in Pennsylvania, is very, it's more open to, okay, well, yes, you don't practice our same religion, and mm-hmm. you don't believe the same things we do. But we can still coexist as neighboring
yeah,
towns.
And I feel like if that wasn't true, they would never have let him in anyway. I mean, they were
no, but this movie
cool
makes it seem a little bit more like, oh no, that man's from the world of, like, a different world.
Well, apparently, you know, Kelly McGillis went to live with a family for research, and as soon as they found out that she was not there to maybe perhaps be Amish one day, that she was there to... research a movie,
mm-hmm.
they kicked her out, and the family was terrified of being
shunned. Well, maybe it's because I believe that's like Lancaster is where it's supposed to be.
Yeah, Lancaster.
Ours was further down. So okay, maybe it's just different.
Yeah.
Because I was in, I'm more southern Pennsylvania. I'm from near Pittsburgh.
Well, that's interesting. So there could be.
So maybe
like,
it's that. But.
Like the Mennonites, I mean, did they be Mennonites, you think?
Well, no. They were all Amish. Mennonites still, like, will use a phone and electricity and have a car.
Oh, that's
the Amish.
I knew that,
like,
they weren't.
Literally,
yeah.
Don't have, like, I remember the first time I saw a horse and buggy, and I was like, but where's their car? And my mom was like, well, they don't, like, she tried to explain to a child what
that's
the Amish
were. That's interesting, because from what I read about the Mennonites, I didn't read that much, but I understood that the Mennonites were advising more on the film because they could. But
yeah.
I didn't realize they actually had
but
cars,
too. But I mean, like,
too.
Maybe Mennonites? Mennonites just
are less,
is a religion.
Yeah, but they're off from the Amish. They're just less strict, is my understanding.
Yeah, I mean, like, Jonathan Groff is I think, grew up Mennonite. Like,
oh, okay.
Sweet, sweet baby Broadway boy Jonathan Groff was Mennonite.
So it's not as close to Amish as I thought. It's just an offshoot of it.
I believe
gotcha,
so.
Okay.
I could be wrong. If I'm wrong, I'm so sorry. But I believe it's
well,
an offshoot of it, but it's no. It's kind of like the Presbyterians to the Catholics.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
The Catholics are way strict and have all these rules. And the Presbyterians are like, same general concept, but not nearly as strict. I can say that because I am Presbyterian and my whole family is Catholic. But,
yeah. And that's how I sort of like, I read very little about the Mennonites, but what I understood was, oh, they're like a less strict version of the Amish, which gives them a great opportunity to then advise the
yeah,
the
I think it's, they have the same general concepts, but it's not, like, they use cars and I think they, like, yeah. Use electricity and stuff, where the Amish, it's completely, like, old school, for lack of a better way of explaining it. But... the movie. So, there's this little Amish boy. He goes into a bathroom. Donald Glover kills a man in the bathroom. The little Amish boy sees it through a little crack. But here's my thing. Why didn't Donald Glover, like, check the bathroom stalls to make sure there wasn't a small child?
He said he did. Do you notice
that
line?
But he didn't.
I know. Like, either they cut the scene out... or he didn't do it very well. Because I noticed that watching it. He's like, oh, did you check? He's like, yeah, I did.
No matter. Small child and his mother, Rachel.
Going to visit her aunt. No, her sister. Her sister.
Her sister. But he sees it, and so then Harrison Ford comes along, like, 20 minutes into this fucking thing. Like, I was saying, like I remember the tweets from when I watched it, and I was like, okay, but where is he? Okay, but where
really,
is he?
I was thinking that's really brave, though. Like, it's about the story that's organically when the character's going to come in. It's not because he happens to be famous. And it's set up these people's lives, but...
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But, whatever. He comes in 20 minutes later. It's fine. Cool. Things happen. He ends up in the Amish country with Rachel and her son to protect them. And it is so... This is what my problem with this movie. It's so much, like, Amish girl looking at a hot, normal guy and being like... Not normal, sorry, that's offensive. A hot, like, non-Amish man.
English, as they call him.
Yeah, well,
he's English.
Yeah, the hot English American, like, just existing in their home. And it's like, he's kind of disrespectful because it very clearly is one of those things where, like, they are a very, they're a very religious people. They're very stuck in their ways. And he comes in and doesn't wear a shirt. I'm like, she's still a red-blooded woman, but, like, you're being offensive to her ways. Like, you could just put on a
gallant,
shirt.
He was pretty though. But we're getting into commentary. I want to hear your summary first so
okay,
we can talk about it.
Okay, so then shit happens. Donald Glover finds out this little kid.
Who's a cop. That's a big issue.
Donald
cops.
Glover was a cop, and then that's why Harrison Ford was, like, protecting this family, because he knew.
And he gets shot.
Yeah. And so that's, they send him to be the witness protection for them because he got shot.
No,
he's shot on the way. I'm kidding.
Yeah. He's working for himself.
Yes.
He hides him at his sister's, who's Patti LuPone.
Yeah. Patti LuPone! And so they hide out, then they end
he's
up...
He's a fugitive because the police that were corrupt and did the whole thing. So he's working on his own, and he's forced to stay there because he's injured.
Yeah. And it's like Harrison Ford galore hour. He's fucking doing carpentry and having a ball with the Amish. And then there's this sex scene, kind of. It's weird. We'll talk about it later. But he, like, flirts with her and then, like, gets serious. And then, like, we'll giggle and flirt with her and then get serious. And I don't understand it. But and he's, like, looking hot on a car. Anyway.
They're conflicted with their love.
Whatever, he's on a car. They shouldn't have a car in the first place. But I know it's his.
It's his car. It's broken down and he's fixing the car.
But whatever. Anyways, so then it all leads up to, like, the cops discover him. Like, Donald Glover comes. He's trying to get the kid to go away, but this kid keeps coming back. And...
Well, the kid saves the day.
Yeah, but there's a... I've talked about it so many times that I hate this scene.
I know.
They all...
I have on the sheet, Rachel will talk about how the pointing scene.
Because she literally... No, not the pointing scene. The pointing scene is later. This is the scene where, like, right after Harrison Ford kills a man in corn. Like, the corn man. Where he turned the corn thing on and killed the guy. And then they are all standing and... Donald Glover has a gun against the little kid. Rachel, I think, is there. Donald Glover is there. And Harrison Ford's there.
I'm not even following this summary now.
But they're all screaming at the same time. Like, Harrison Ford's trying to get Donald Glover to not kill the kid. But he's going... And they're all yelling.
Donald Glover is dead already.
Well, someone has the kid.
Oh, you mean the scene before.
Yeah.
I thought you meant the pointing, yelling scene.
No. I'm talking about the... No, not that one.
Oh.
I'm talking about the scene where... The pointing yelling scene is after I said. This is the scene where they all start screaming over each other right after.
Danny Glover's dead by then.
Okay, well, whoever it is, they're all screaming at each other.
Joff Sommer? What is this guy's name? Joff... No, it's German. Joss.
All right, well, the German man is screaming, and so is Harrison Ford, and everyone's just screaming over each other. And to this day, every time I think of Witness, I'm like, I cannot handle that.
I know, it's all you talk about.
It drives me insane.
I think that the screaming, though, helps them disarm the assailant, not necessarily literally.
Okay, but then it could have been, like, a screaming match that, like, took turns. Instead, it was just, like, like a cacophony of yells.
You don't think that's realistic, though, that people were just kind of, like, a big hot mess?
No.
Okay.
Because even
I totally,
like,
can see your frustration, but I think it's organic.
Yeah, I guess. And then there's, of course, the pointing and yelling. And then there's the end of this movie. He's in this tan suit and he just walks away. And it's just an ass shot of Harrison Ford.
I don't think that was the point, but yeah.
But that's what it is. It may not have been the directorial point, but, like, it literally is just an ass shot.
They don't end up together. He goes off.
Yeah, because she's Amish. Of course they're not gonna... He slept with her, though, which is wrong.
But you see, there's that point in the movie when they almost sleep together and he says, which is one of your favorite lines, Rachel, when we almost made love last night, you know, if we did, I'd have to stay or you'd have to leave. Like, that's the conflict. It's a love story
with
a conflict.
Yeah, but didn't they end up actually sleeping together?
They do, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm like...
And then it's sadder.
No, it's not sadder, it's... You are ruining this poor girl's life.
I would like to read a quote from Harrison Ford that said, "It's much more fun to watch the tension and anticipation than it is to watch people shtup." And shtup is my favorite Yiddish word.
Harrison, for the first time in my life, I disagree with you.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
My biggest problem with movies.
Yeah?
Like, perfect examples, Bridget Jones' Diary, is you make me sit that whole movie.
Well, they don't shtup. That's the thing.
No,
they do, but...
But at the end of the movie,
it's sad. It's a tragic love story.
No!
In fact, that scene had all of this, you would have hated even more. Apparently, originally in the script, the scene was like him telling her, Rachel, this is why I'm leaving. I'm leaving, blah, 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 blah. It was like 2 pages or something. And Peter Weir was like, no, like, it's much more beautiful if it's silent and... You can read on their faces, like, the sadness, and it's a quiet scene. Which I think is some of the great parts of this movie is actually the silence that Peter Weir has in many moments that were very scripted.
Mm-hmm.
And the studio was like, no, the audience needs to have him say why he's leaving.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous. Well, let me talk a little bit about the history of the film, because this is sort of a turning point in Harrison Ford's life.
Yeah.
His manager, Pat McQueenie, who we talked about briefly, who when we get to an episode that doesn't have as much meat, we'll talk more about the history of them together. But they had a really good relationship, and he had told her to try to find something that could get him out of this sort of, you know, hero, superhero mold, because he was filming Temple of Doom, Han Solo. He wanted to do something that was contemporary, for example. So she found this script that everyone had turned down. In fact, Harrison's agent told Pat to not even, like, give it to Harrison, that she would embarrass herself because everyone in town had passed it. And it was sort of a large script, and once Harrison read it, he said, it's not without flaws. It's like 90% there. It was called Home, and that's not me saying.
It was called Home?
Exactly. So it wasn't called, quote, Home. It was, quote, called Home, end quote.
That is so much more confusing than you just saying it was called Home. I understood exactly what you meant.
It was called Home. You had a question. I thought you were confused.
I was just saying, oh, so it was called home.
Yeah.
It was named Called Home. Why didn't you just say that?
That's true. That would actually have made more sense. But yes, this comic banter would not continue. So they felt this was a script that he could, you know, break out of sort of the mold that he was in. And she called him and it's like, I found it. And like, not very long later, he's like, you have, Pat. You found it. So the producers sent it to him.
I love you attempting to do a Harrison Ford impression.
Oh, please. If anyone has seen us on Beltway Bantas, they cut it out because I could not do an Harrison Ford impression. I was also on the spot. I cannot do impressions at all, and particularly cannot do impressions of Harrison Ford. So the producers particularly wanted, they had sent in the script, and I thought this was interesting because they were looking for a Gary Cooper type. And they really felt like this was sort of like a, well, eventually, I guess they decided it was almost like a Western in a way, you know. Like Shane, I felt like at the end of him, like, walking away, like, Shane, come back. No, I'm leaving. That's not really direct quotes from the movie, by the way. Also, really kind of scary is that Harrison almost got killed because he decided...
Story of this man's life.
I know.
Please explain.
Before he even filmed the movie, he decided to, shadow... the head of homicide in Philly. He went on fugitive raids. His quote was, the fifth corpse is just as shocking as the sixth or seventh corpse.
I can't wait till we see. What's that movie where he's another detective? I'm sure he did something just as terrifying.
Devil something. Devil.
No, I'm not thinking of that one.
Oh, what else happens in the movie? When he's a cop?
No, it's the, I don't want to ruin it, but it's the hot sex scene one.
Oh, Presumed Innocent.
Yeah.
He's a cop
one.
In that. Yeah, looking forward to that one.
I'm like, I can't wait to hear what he did went for under for that one.
And then one actually super scary story, which I was alluding to when he almost got killed, was, you know how in the movie there's a scene where Harrison goes into the front of a bar, they're looking for a suspect, and then his partner goes through the back. That apparently is a real thing that they do.
Yeah.
So the homicide guy that he was with was like, I don't know, I'm not a cop.
I was like, yes, that is like a completely normal thing. Like, one would go in the front, one would go towards the back.
I don't know. I'm
not
a cop.
That's why you have partners. So you have each other's back. You can cover more area.
I thought that might be more for, like, when you're raiding a place, not just, like,
no.
William. Anyway, I don't watch a lot of cop movies, apparently. So,
if I didn't have anxiety, I would be a cop.
I really do not see you as a cop at all.
I would
all.
Be a detective.
Okay.
Anyway,
where was I? That's right. Harrison almost died. So the homicide guy that he was with, he couldn't get in through the back door. And Harrison was stuck. And finally, he just had to run around and come in the front. And he probably, like, almost died. And Peter Weir was like, please don't do that. It's just a movie. And if you die, what do I tell the studio?
LOL, this movie's not getting made.
But what's interesting is, so this is what Harrison said in a documentary about it. He said, it was an opportunity to be a different character from what I've been doing, a contemporary, which I mentioned, and it was a terrific script, and that he liked the juxtaposition of modern world and the Amish and a complicated and different love story.
How sweet.
So thank you for not dying, Harrison Ford.
That man has a death sentence. That has been on his head since the 80s.
Well, one of the things that Peter Weir really admired about him was that he has guts. And that, you know, this is the one of two back-to-back movies that they did together.
There's a difference between guts and a suicide mission. I feel like everything he does is, like, leading to, like, yeah, Harrison Ford had a door dropped on him. Then he crashed a plane. He almost died because he was on a homicide raid. He's insane. I love him, but he's insane.
I think for him, it's not necessary sanity or insanity. I think it's just a dedication to his craft and that he wants to be correct, which a lot of actors, you know, you want to be authentic. That's better. Not correct. Authentic.
I think it's also more of a, like, he's always kind of been the guy who's like, yeah, I'll do it. Why not? And so then it that never works out for any human being. When you say, yeah, I'll try everything at least once. It's how you get dysentery. It's how you get...
back surgery.
It's how you are just, like, a mess.
How, and your, I think we also have to be careful about not saying that his plane crashed, because he likes to say that he didn't crash the plane, it fell out of the sky.
Okay, well then you dropped the plane out the sky.
Because he always wants, I just love the fact that he always wants to point out, I didn't crash it, the engine just stopped working. Well, what's really interesting is that, as I mentioned, this is the second film with that will be with Peter Weir directing, is that he was in pre-production with Mosquito Coast and Harrison really wanted him to direct it, but he was busy. But pre-production, like the money or something, like fell through, like it didn't happen. And he was so devastated that Peter Weir was like, get me something that I'm not passionate about. Like in the 40s, the studios would just assign you a movie, like just assign me a movie. So this movie sort of dropped in his lap because Harrison was sort of waiting for the perfect director. He felt because the script wasn't 100% there that with a bad director, it could really ruin it. And Jeffrey Katzenberg, who we all know from Disney and so forth and working with Spielberg, is he was running Paramount at the time, right before he was about to go to Disney, and he threatened Pat. He was like, if you don't pick a director, we're moving on. And she's like, no, no, you won't, because I brought you the script. And so Harrison's going to do it. And Peter Weir flew out to Jackson Hole, and they didn't realize that they were interviewing each other, because Peter Weir was kind of like, oh, I was like a movie star, like, I don't really know, this is my first American movie, and they got along super well, because he felt that Harrison spoke to him like a filmmaker and not like an actor, that he was more than happy, which many people have said in the past, if this scene's not working, even if it's a huge scene for me and a lot of lines, cut it, it's about the movie as a whole, not about me.
What a man.
Yeah.
What a man. What a mighty good man.
Yes. I also love how, and I think you'll appreciate this, how Kelly McGillis got the role. It was only like her second movie. She'd done some TV stuff, I think, like TV movies, but her only second like feature movie. But it was very impressive. It was called Reuben Reuben. And literally her last sort of interview and like, hey, you got the job, was Harrison and Peter picked her up after her shift as a waitress. And then she wasn't done yet. And so they were like, oh, just wait. So Harrison Ford and Peter Weir are hanging out in the coffee shop where she worked. And everyone's like, Harrison Ford's here. And she's like, yeah, I'm meeting him afterwards. And she never went back to her job after that. Like, this is
not a way to quit, but also an awesome story.
Yeah, but she didn't know she had the job yet. So she couldn't, like, knock off early. She had to be like, I'm sorry, my shift's not over yet. You have to wait.
I know, but what a terrible way to quit. Like, finish shift. Okay, I'm never coming back. Bye.
So you didn't get the part. Oh, oops. Hey, can I have my job back?
Yeah, hey, what about that job?
So they got on, you know, very, very well. And then, obviously, thank God that Mosquito Coast fell through, because it's one of Harrison's favorite movies, which we will talk about in 2 weeks.
Yes.
So, obviously, I enjoy the movie more than you do.
Yeah.
Do you have any favorite parts of the movie, though?
Oh, where he looks really good with the car lantern scene. That's like a lantern on a car.
Let's talk about that. That's a really great scene. And apparently it was Harrison's idea to bring in the music because he felt that it would make it a little more personal, the Sam Cooke song. Which, watching the movie again...
Which Sam Cooke?
It's not actually Sam Cooke, I don't think.
What song is it?
Oh, it's Wonderful World.
Okay. Because I haven't, like, I didn't have a chance to rewatch, so I'm going up. Granted, I only saw it, like, a couple of months ago, so I wasn't, like, needing to watch it again.
I didn't remember the name of the song either, because it starts off very differently, and there's also that famous song, Oh, What a Wonderful World. So I was like, oh, wait, that's not that song. It's just another song but listening to it, being a big Sam Cooke fan, I went, wait a second. I think that they didn't have the rights to it, and they had someone else record it as a Sam Cooke sound-alike. But I don't know. That's what it sounded like to me. But that whole scene was in the essence of it, which made it so wonderful, you know, his idea.
Yeah, he looked good.
Well, he's bringing it. What's sort of beautiful is that this is something she's not supposed to do. It's the whole thing. He's a very forbidden sort of presence in their life.
Yeah. Maybe it's just because I grew up around the Amish. From where I'm from, it's just so strange to me, and maybe that's why I don't like it, that, like...
I could see that.
His character bothers me, because he's making her, like, bring her so far out of her comfort zone, and, like, kind of being, like, the rough and tumble, like, yeah, I'm a hot guy. And but this girl's like, it's completely against everything she knows.
See, I felt that he was such a like, in fact, I wasn't surprised when they said, oh, it's like a Western, because he felt sort of like that hero. I mean, he goes out of his way to save these people when he didn't have to. I mean, yeah, he's sort of stuck there, yes, but he has the files, you know, taken away by his, or, you know, destroyed somehow by his partner, who ends up being killed. He hides her at his sister's house. He seems like a really good guy. I think he's just confused. He doesn't really understand her ways. You know, it's, you know, he makes a joke about a commercial, which I really thought, like, you didn't think they'd get the joke about a commercial when they don't have electricity? That was the one thing that was surprising. But I think it's the idea that it's this fish out of water, and he doesn't really get, whereas you would get more because you grew up around there.
Well, no, but I think, but it's also one of those things where it's like, when she establishes from the get-go, like, no, like, this is not the way of our people, and then he's still, like, later with the car scene, as much as I like that, that's completely against, like, listening to the music and dance. Yeah. Completely against everything.
You're offended for her.
Yeah! Like, I'm like, no. If I was her, I'd be like, no, dude. Again, unless you want to become part of our religion, I'm shutting it down. But instead, he's like a hot guy who is showing her interest. And honestly, no matter who you are, if Harrison Ford at that age was showing you some interest, you'd be like, okay, sure. I'll forget every moral standing I have, everything, and, like, listen to this man. And it's just, like, for me, I was like, oh, I don't like that.
Well, you know, it's been a year since her husband died. She's alone. Still. Maybe he's intriguing. And, yes, he is quite attractive.
I'm just offended for her.
Harrison did much of his own carpentry in the film.
How unsurprising.
I know. And something interesting I came across, too, was how Peter Weir, particularly, or maybe it was the person in the book I was reading, really sort of compared his acting process to, like, how he is as a carpenter. Which is interesting, I think, that there's a process, you know, you start from the ground up, there's a foundation, and in acting there's a foundation. Although he said that he felt that it was a very logical plan that he sets out in advance as an actor, which surprised me because I thought he'd be the kind of actor who would do that, but then get on set and kind of throw it out.
Yeah.
In fact, I think we have a little more insight into why he might be kind of like very distant or like hard to get to know. I mean, when we were on Beltway Banthas, we did actually find out that he probably has not an anxiety problem. What was it?
He has social anxiety.
Social anxiety. That's the word I meant to put in front of the anxiety. Social anxiety. But apparently, when he's on set, he likes to just sit and stare at the wall because he doesn't want to really, like, lose what he's been working on. He calls it mental suspension because he feels that he can't concentrate on anything else. And he feels that's the worst part of being an actor. Steven Spielberg said he feels he's drifting away from the fakery. But that also surprised me, too, that he's that kind of actor.
Yeah. I mean, You learn things about actors. Like, I mean, like, that's not too surprising. Because there is, like, there's always something, like, that for me, I always try and, like, the minute I do something, I drop it and I'm me. And then, like, because it won't, you don't want to try and recreate something.
Exactly,
you
want to
just
yeah.
have it be fresh every single time. And so, but that's what works for me. That
oh, yeah, everyone's different.
Like,
yeah.
For him, like, clearly it's, I have to not think of anything else.
Yeah. And so it sounds like a lot of people, you know, that combined with maybe when he gets along with someone, he gets along with someone. He tends to get along more with, like, crew members than necessarily the actors. And it may be half the social issue, but also might be just half of, like, well, he's focusing on, that's how he feels that he needs to be the best actor on set, is to not be distracted.
Yeah.
So the barn raising was really interesting because I was talking to a friend of mine and I found out that her great uncle was actually on set. And so all the people in the background are really carpenters. And I wanted to read sort of an excerpt of something she sent me because she's also a playwright. And it was really sort of just very sweet about Harrison, you know, on set and who he is, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Her great uncle had been a carpenter in Pennsylvania for a very long time. You know, they're on set. He was selected to build the barn. He said the actors were on set. She said, excuse me, but they didn't really sort of, you know, actually build it. But they were there for, you know, close-ups. And then she wrote this sort of beautiful thing that the carpenters had lunch in their own area while the actors ate in another. One of the actors, however, took his plate of food and walked over to the carpenters. He asked if he could join them and explained that he had been a carpenter before he became an actor, and he felt more comfortable having lunch with them than with the other performers. And that is how my great uncle and a lot of other carpenters had lunch with Harrison Ford. And Leroy, her uncle, described him as very polite, unpretentious, excuse me. And he was obviously like a very huge star at that point, which she likes to say. And for the rest of his life, he always talked about just how lovely and approachable Harrison Ford was.
I like that you read that story like Harrison Ford is dead. It made it seem so somber. Like, like, remember Harrison Ford. I'm like, he's fine. He's in Budapest. He's chilling.
Well, I think it was half of being A, I'm touched, and two, me going, I can't read this whole thing. I'm going to skim it as I read it and just read the most beautiful parts.
It was just so funny because it was so somber. And I'm like, Lauren, he's fine. He's in Budapest. They're filming Blade Runner 2 right now.
That reminds me of when I used to telemarket, we would have people be, like, really mean to us. And one day, I just, like, couldn't take it anymore. And this guy was like, I wouldn't come to your theater if Marilyn Monroe was dancing naked on stage. And then I let a pause happen, and I just went, I'm so sorry, sir. I don't know if you're aware, but Ms. Monroe is no longer with us. I don't think you know what I'm talking about. No, sir, I don't think I do. I think you need to explain to me exactly what you're saying.
That was funny. I was just kind of like, Lauren, he's fine.
I was being touched.
So somber, he's not dead. Lauren, he's fine.
Well, considering what we've explained, who knows what he's doing on set?
Yeah, who knows what's happening in Budapest?
Well, apparently, according to the internet, he's eating out a lot and drinking lots of wine and riding his bike.
Who? I don't understand him at all.
The bike?
Him in general.
I mean, we're unfortunately not going to have time to really talk that much about Blade Runner 2. We'll talk about it in 2 weeks.
No, I'm just saying, but Harrison Ford in general, I don't understand.
Because I know why he's riding the bike, but I'll save that for 2 weeks
from
now.
I just don't understand Harrison Ford. He does things. I'm like, why? Why? I don't get it.
Well, they said that him being good at carpentry was actually apparently in the script. And that they didn't write it for him. But the whole barn raising scene was definitely, I think, heightened.
Because he could actually.
Because he could actually do it, exactly. And Peter Weir said it was really great to watch him sort of become the leader of, you know, all these people and what they were doing.
I realize I have a type of man, and it's carpenter meets actor.
Well, you know what? Something that we haven't mentioned on the show before that I found out recently is... he taught himself to be a carpenter by getting a book out of the library.
God damn it.
I know. And then he taught himself, and then he got his first job by pretty much like saying he had more experience than he did.
Well, I say that though because when Colin Firth lived in Canada,
yeah,
I think the way he made his money, I remember reading, I don't know if it's true or not, was that he did carpentry.
Really?
And I'm like, Jesus Christ.
You really, really have a
type.
So should we talk about the actors in this movie? Because there's some really great actors who went on to do, like, really, really big stuff.
Let's just go through them really quickly.
Yeah, no. So the interesting thing about Danny Glover is that this is the same year that Color Purple came out.
To be real, I love the Color Purple.
Love the Color Purple.
Had no, like, I only knew about the stage musical, so I had no idea.
You've never seen the movie?
No.
But it's so good.
On your list... you put the Color Purple and Silverado, and I'm like, I'm great, but that's not what I know Danny Glover from. You didn't put Lethal Weapon.
No, it hadn't come out yet.
I know, but those
that
are,
was
then
why,
I realized
yeah.
they're the same year, but I was like, you didn't even write Lethal Weapon.
No, so I didn't write it because I thought it was interesting that, like, this is before that.
Yeah.
You know, because I was just surprised because he has kind of a small part in this movie that it was the same year that Color Purple came out. I thought,
yeah.
Oh, he's not a really kind of a name yet. But he had already done a movie with Sally Field. So he actually was a bigger star than I realized. I guess maybe the part had been bigger originally. Who knows? I don't know. And Silverado, which is, of course, written by our favorite person who wrote Empire Strikes Back. I'm so tired because we've had the craziest weekend whose name has now gone out of my head.
Ira Irvin?
No! That's the director.
I don't know.
Everyone's laughing at us right now. Anyway, Silverado was his big director.
I don't remember. I'm tired.
We're so tired. We spent the... Oh, my God. Comic-Con was exhausting. Anyway, Patti LuPone...
Patti LuPone!
...was in Oliver at the time.
As long as he needs me. Yes, he does.
She said she just said yes to every film stuff because it's not anything that she ever gets offered.
Oh, yeah, because she's fucking Patti LuPone.
Patti LuPone.
She's standing on the stage going, don't cry for me, Argentina.
Yeah, that's what I figured she was doing, but no, it was Oliver.
No, Oliver was in 85.
Yeah, I'm not the... I don't follow Patti LuPone's career as much as I follow...
Hello, I was a performance theater major. Let me tell you about Patti LuPone.
And Viggo Mortensen, it's his first film. He gave up doing Shakespeare in the Park to do it. He just felt like he wanted to be able to do more film. I would not have known it was him if I hadn't been watching this documentary. And I went, wait a second.
Oh, Viggo.
And then Agnes McInnes, I don't know how to say his name again. I'm butchering it because I mentioned him before because he was the gold leader in New Hope. And then Alexander Goudinov, which I can say because I've heard his name said out loud several times because he's in, like, The Money Pit. He's in Die Hard. Like, he's also been, like, a big part of my childhood. And it's also interesting because it's his first movie, and Harrison was very unsure, like, oh, this guy's never acted before. He's a ballet dancer. And in the 80s, there was so many sort of artists who were defecting from Soviet Russia and were coming to America.
Yeah.
Including Mikhail Baryshnikov, who I saw on the street once, and he glides. Like, it was unbelievable.
My mom loves him because of Sex and the City.
Oh, I love
that's
him because of White Nights.
That's the only reason I remember. Oh, well, I remember seeing that clip and stuff. But my mom, like, when Sex and the City came on, like, she, like, sat me down and goes, this man is a ballet. And I'm like, I was probably, like, 9.
He's short. He's very
small.
Yeah,
but I was, like, 9. I was like, okay, Mom, like, I don't understand what you're doing here.
Well, White Nights came out this year with Gregory Hines and Helen Mirren, and it's got dancing in it. When I was very young, it was all about dancing movies. And then I thought for some of our audience members who are a fan of Star Trek like
Dear
you.
Dear boy, Anton.
Yeah, his family, they were skaters, and they...
Anton Yelkin.
They immigrated... because of Soviet Russia at that time as well.
Oh, sweet boy.
Yeah, it's very sad. So, anything that we haven't covered about Witness?
No, I think Witness is... he was nominated and lost.
Well, that's what
Academy
I'm
going
to get to. Yeah, we're going to go to after the film. He was nominated for Academy Award. He was very cool about it. He was like, it's like, I'm not into awards. This is not like a big deal. Like, my friends think that it's like revenge for all the bad reviews I got. And he's like, but I got really good reviews in it, and I'm happy about this. Like, this is great, but no, it's not a big deal if I win. In fact, he didn't even go because he was filming Mosquito Coast. They watched it on set on his yacht or his boat.
Oh, Jesus.
He had a boat. He lived on a boat there. We'll get into that later. And we mentioned William Hurt won. It did pretty well, actually, although a lot of the previews, they were concerned people would think it was like another... Temple of Doom or another Indiana Jones, but they got really into it. It was number 8 for the overall year. Back to the Future was number 1, of course, because it's awesome. And it was beat by Beverly Hills Cop 2. No, I'm sorry, Beverly Hills Cop. I messed that up last time.
What did I say?
Weekend.
Just don't bring it up. No one called us out. And then you bring
it up. I didn't mean to say that, but I was looking at my list, and yeah, I did, so. The book I read was wrong, that's all I can say.
Yeah.
And so, I think now is probably a really good time for us to talk about our experience at Comic-Con.
Oh, boy.
Or the Carrie Fisher 3-day weekend.
It was exciting.
Yeah, I feel like you should talk about it first, because this is your first con.
Oh, God, I hated it. I don't have social anxiety. I always like talking to people. I'm the first one in a room to be like, hi, what's your name? And like, let's talk, da 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 da. But that amount of people I feel like I was
so... Should have been there on Sunday.
I feel like I was so not fun to be around because I was, like,
you were super
so
fun to be around. Much more than I was. I was overwhelmed.
Yeah, like, the whole time I was, like, I knew, like, what I wanted to do, and once it was done, I knew I could enjoy myself, but the problem was, like, getting it done because there were so many people in so many lines, and people would just, like, line up, and you would ask them what they were in line for, and they were like, I don't know. I'm like, then why the fuck are you standing there? Oh, it was just so frustrating.
See, I'm not into lines. I know
I
that
don't
was...
mind them, but it's just, like,
but I also don't like to, I'm not really into sort of, you know, like, the picture part of it. Like, we waited in a lot of lines, like, to get your picture in the chair, which was really cool. Yeah. But, I wore a green shirt. So, the green screen, because I don't usually do that stuff. And you were like, let's do the green screen. I'm like, okay. And I disappeared.
Yeah. She wore a green shirt and then realized everything was green screen anymore. So, Lauren couldn't take part in, like,
but that,
half of
I don't think that way because that's not why I like the con. Like, I like to look at the merchandise and I like looking at the costumes.
See, that, was, that was too overwhelming for me. All that merchandise, I was like, I don't know what I'm looking at. Some guy sold me a thing and said, oh, it's limited edition only at Comic-Con, Doctor Who TARDIS. I'm like, I probably could find this on the internet, but I don't know. This guy's just telling me it's limited edition. I'm going to buy it.
Well, usually that stuff is. And I have to say that I went on a Thursday. This is only my second con. I went on a Thursday the first time. And I went out going, I don't think this is really for me. And I feel like I have sort of a love-hate relationship with it right now because I loved meeting everybody. I love looking at the costumes. We met some of our listeners. Like, that part was really awesome, but it's just so many people. And I went back on Sunday because I ended up getting a pro pass on Friday because I'm writing a column on BBC America's panel for Forces of Geek. And I had friends who were there I hadn't seen in a while, and I was picking up some stuff for us. The Del Rey booth was really nice to give us a copy of Life Debt. So I was kind of doing errands when I was there, and it was even worse. I couldn't even walk on the floor, and I'm like, it's just too much.
See, I don't mind that. The people, I don't mind. It's just, for me as a person, I need to know what I'm waiting in line for. Like, I will wait in a line.
I thought we knew we always knew.
But I would go up to lines and be like, oh, well, what are you waiting in line for?
Well, that was one person they
and
did.
No,
they
but
went,
it happened
I don't
a
know.
Couple times.
Oh, did
like,
it?
I don't know. And I'm like, then what the fuck are you waiting in line? Like, I got so frustrated because people were like, I'm just standing here. And I'm like,
oh, you were frustrated
like,
with people.
An idiot. Yeah. I was
well,
just.
Well, you know.
Oh, it was, that was frustrating. Also.
So talk about meeting Carrie Fisher.
Okay, so we kept walking through the autographing thing because I thought it'd be a smart idea for me to just, like, kind of see Carrie Fisher in the flesh before I went in for my picture. Because I figured if I saw her first, I would be a lot calmer when I went in and I wouldn't be so nervous. It made it worse. I saw her and flipped out a little bit. But I was, like, far enough away that, like, she didn't notice. But
yeah,
I kind of
like to be that close.
Yeah, I like geeked out for a second. I was like, holy shit. She's putting glitter on. She's Simba-ing people with glitter. This is great.
Yeah, her accessories were glitter, a cup of Coke, and Perel.
And so then we walked past Stan Lee, who I still believe he's dead. And then, like, we would just, like, see, like, I saw Evangeline Lilly and remembered, like, how much I love Lost and how much she meant to me. And so that was really cool. And so it was cool to walk through there and just, like, glance at these people. Like, it wasn't... I'm not the kind of person who wants to drop $90 to be like, I loved you 5 years ago to, like, yeah. Angelina Lilly and stuff. But it was cool to, like, see her and be like, wow, I remember, like, how much I loved Lost and how much... Like, if this was back when I was in high school, I would have... So it was more than 5 years ago. It was, like, 9 years ago. I would have, like, flipped out.
Well, I think it's a good thing. I don't know how I call it, but to sort of, like, pay tribute to your younger self. Be like, this
yeah.
meant a lot to me when I was a certain age and, you know, like, high five to myself in the past. Like, I owe to this person who I used to be to, like, just kind of take a look at that.
Yes, that's why I kind of stood there for, like, a minute and looked at Evangeline Lilly. And so then I went and got in line really early, which I'm glad I did because we ended up sitting in line for, like, 2.5 hours.
I couldn't believe how long you were in line.
Well, because I don't know what happened, but I guess... It got delayed, and so, like, Carrie, like, I don't know what happened. So we were supposed to start at 4:30, and people started going through at, like, 5:45.
Wow.
I was supposed to be done by then, because my time was 5 o'clock. And the kids in front of me, like, the two guys, had Stan Lee tickets for like $6.45. Oh, so the whole time they were like, are we gonna make Stan Lee? Are we gonna make Stan Lee?
And Stan Lee's line was really long. That was the longest I think that we saw.
And so no, not for autographs. Like they had Stan Lee for pictures.
Oh, gotcha.
So I waited. I like talked to some really nice people online. And then I kept being like, I don't know what I want to do, like what I want my pose to be. Because my biggest thing was like, I don't want to go in and just like have the normal pose. I want it to be something that like I'm going to remember. And so I don't know what part of my brain thought this, but I was like, man, Little Lady's Not Giving a Fuck is my favorite. That like, that's why I love Carrie Fisher, is she's a short little lady too. And she just doesn't care. And so I was like, it'd be funny if we flipped off the camera. And so I was saying it, and the lady, like, I didn't realize how funny of an idea it was until I posted the picture and everyone went crazy. And then the people behind me were like, oh, we did it too, because we thought it was so funny. And I was like, really?
Because it's so her.
But I was like, is that, like, I, like, it never dawned on me that it was funny until, like, I posted it on Facebook and got, like, 200 and some likes on it. I posted it here and it got a bunch. And I was like, I didn't realize this was insane.
Perfect for her personality, like... Well, say what you said when you said you asked one of her handlers.
Oh, so her handlers. So I asked...
that's what they call them.
So when you go in, there's like a woman standing at the thing, and they were like, I had asked, am I allowed to flip off the camera? And she went, probably ask the woman with the glasses inside. So I asked the woman with the glasses. She said, that's probably fine, but ask this gentleman. He works with Carrie. He would know more. So I looked at the... like, I just kept going person to person. So I asked guy, I was like, would it be cool if I asked, if she says it's fine, can we flip off the camera? And the guy went, oh, she's going to love that. And so I walked up and I was like, hi, you follow me on Twitter, you're an idol of mine, can we flip off the camera? And it was the only three things I said to her. And she just goes, sure. And instantly flips off the camera. And it's like, I love that picture, but my favorite moment of the day was looking at all of the different versions of Gary. Because he just...
Oh, in other people's pictures?
Yes, because he would be, like, not looking. His tongue was out. He was this way.
Gary's having the best time of anyone on this planet.
Oh, it was great. It was so great. But, yeah, and then we went and saw the Wonder Woman costumes really quickly.
Yeah, which were really cool. I was very excited to see Linda Carter's Wonder Woman outfit because when I was very small, I used to watch reruns of it. It's funny how it's, like, faded a little bit. Yeah. So that was really cool.
I think my weirdest thing about Comic-Con was, like, with the cosplay, it's, like, it was all cool and it was great, but creepy old guys would walk up to, like, we met this wonderful girl who was Slave Leia, and guys would just come up to her and be like, can I have your picture? And would just take her picture and walk away.
Yeah.
And I was like, that is insane to me.
Well, that's why they have
taking a picture with somebody, being like, wow, your costume's cool.
Yeah.
Different story than... And, like, Lauren and I prefaced a lot of things with, we have a Harrison Ford podcast, or I'd be like, I write for Culturist. Can I have your picture for the website?
Can we put this on the social media?
These guys would just come and be like, can I have your picture? And some of them wouldn't even ask. They would just take her picture and walk away. And I was like, what is going on? And to me, if I was wearing a costume and people would just take my picture and not ask, especially, I would be very put off by it. And I think that's why I was very, like, I felt very comfortable in my jeans and t-shirt.
No. I agree with you. And, I mean, there's a big reason why there's a big, huge signs everywhere that says cosplay is not consent.
But at the same time, that's also very sad that has to exist.
Oh, it's totally sad. And a friend of mine who was there as press literally went from doing an interview about feminism to then being sexually harassed by a staff member at the Jacob Javits Center. She was like, oh, interesting. And I was like, there are big signs. They work there. There are big signs. And I can't imagine what she was wearing because I know she wore a different costume every day. I don't even think it was that. Not that it even matters.
It doesn't matter. Like, this
doesn't even matter.
I feel so bad. I can't remember her name, but the girl we met, it was so sweet. And she was straight up nice.
We had a great conversation with her.
The Slave Leia costume. And it was just so weird to me that this, like, I remember there was this one guy and he was so creepy.
I didn't even notice
that.
And
he came up and goes, can I have a picture? And just, like, took it and it freaked me out. And I talked to my friend at work about that and because he does cosplay and he goes, oh, yeah, he's like, I ask female cosplayers, like, how do you feel being, like, you have to, like, push your boobs up. And some of them are like, I hate it, but I love doing cosplay. And if that's what I have to do to, like, do it for a living. That's what I do. And it broke my heart. 'Cause I'm like, that's so annoying, because like my friend Josh, who does it, is praised for how good he is at cosplay. And I'm like, then there are these girls who basically are seen as sex symbols.
No. Yeah.
And I think that's what rubbed me the wrong way from Comic-Con.
I can see that. And I had obviously been to one before. I mean, this was the first time I'd been there on a weekend. It's sad, because you want to be able to dress the way that you want to dress and have fun just like anybody else. But because someone else sees you in a certain light, then either you feel self-conscious or you feel like invaded.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, it's weird, because on my way there it happened, because my shirt said, okay, but Colin Firth, though. And it was weird. There it goes, the sink. Aww. It was weird because a couple, like, old guys on the train would read my shirt and, like, scoff. And it was kind of one of those things where I'm like, well, my shirt isn't for you, A, and B.
Scoff? I don't even get that.
Because it's one of those things where it's like, if you're openly being like, oh, no, but this guy, though, like, I like this guy.
Like an older guy? Is that?
No, I think it was more like, oh, I'm physically putting on my shirt that I am attracted to this man. I think it kind of shuts down other guys from being like, well,
that's weird.
I'm going to hit on you because I'm, and so like, it, I don't know what it was, but it was weird. And it happened a couple of times, and it was funny because I was walking, you would see girls read my shirt and laugh or like nod.
Yeah.
And then you would see guys be like, as they walked past.
Oh, tell everybody about the
Kingsman booth.
Kingsman booth.
So yeah. I was so confused.
You talked about it for days. We have to go to the Kingsman booth. We have to go to the Kingsman booth.
I saw it and it was so cool because it said Manners Maketh Man. And it was the only Kingsman thing in the entire thing. And so it said Manners Maketh Man. You could have the scotch, and it like was an umbrella and a jacket. It was like, it looked like, it said the Kingsman bar, which I'm like, the Kingsman bar isn't a thing. The bar from Kingsman is a thing. And then Kingsman is a tailoring thing. Anyway, I was like, if we're gonna be specific, Kingsman Bar is not a thing. But they put this backdrop up. You can go and take a picture, whatever. So I was sitting there, and my shirt, again, said, okay, but Colin Firth, though. And so I was standing in the counter, and this guy who worked for the booth or 20th Century Fox or whatever it was,
mm-hmm.
comes out of nowhere. These two girls are just taking my picture. I was like, I want to take two pictures. It's okay. I wanted one with the scotch, one with me, with the umbrella in the front. Open the umbrella in a building, because I have no sense of
that.
Yeah,
and at first I thought he was stopping you from doing that.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, he doesn't want you to open the umbrella.
No, but then I'd seen people with the umbrella open, so I was like, someone just did it on there. I'm allowed. But then he went, oh my God, her shirt. We need to put her in the front of the thing so we can... And I went... what's going on? And he goes, get up on the bar. The bar is not like a real bar. It's like a wooden thing that they just put there. So it's not sturdy. And this guy wants me to jump up on it. And I was like, sir, I'm a klutz. He goes, it'll hold your weight. I'm like, that's not my concern. I'm a klutz. And so I finally maneuver my body onto the bar. And then he starts staging me like one of those French, like he literally like paint me like one of your French girls. That's what this man did.
It's like a photo shoot. He turned into a photo shoot.
And then I finally asked him. I was like, is this going anywhere? He went, no, I did it for you because you have a Colin Firth shirt on. And I was like, thank you, but what? And like, but now there's a guy on Twitter named James Poole who I think works for that company.
Yeah.
Was liking and sharing it. And it's like so weird to me. I'm like, I was like, could you imagine what would have happened if I had the Eggsy shirt, like the Eggsy gal hat that I was going to buy? I'm like, they would have lost their damn mind.
So just to sort of update the audience, because we haven't been live for a while, what's the process of the shirts? Because I think the last time we talked on the show, you were going to wear a different shirt than the one you actually wore.
Yes, it was going to be. I was going to make a Princess Diaries 2 shirt. That was too hard. So then I ended up getting Unless Your Name is Chris Pine, I Don't Care.
That's right. I remember that.
And I was going to wear that one, and then I was like, had read things that Star Trek wasn't as prominent other years at Comic-Con.
And then we get there, and there's a huge picture
of Chris
Pine.
And like, the first thing I see is Chris Pine. So I was like, okay, well, then I'll wear a Kingsman, or a Colin Firth shirt, or a Kingsman shirt. And so it was between Okay But Colin Firth, though, and one that was like, where they have the names and the and symbols, and it was like Eggsy, Galahad, Merlin, Lancelot, and all that.
I always love those.
And so I ended up getting the OK But Colin Firth though shirt, and I wore that one. Because I thought that'd be funnier in a picture with Carrie Fisher than the Chris Pine shirt.
Yeah, no, I liked it.
Because I feel like the whole progression was, I'm going to meet Carrie Fisher, what shirt would actually be funny? Chris Pine was going to happen if I wasn't meeting Carrie Fisher. With Carrie Fisher, I'm like, no, but OK Colin Firth though is a funnier shirt.
It also, because it was less words, you could read it better, I think.
Yeah, the Chris Pine one would have been, like, a lot of people sitting, like...
What does it say?
And, yeah, and so it was nice, and I liked it. But, yeah, that's Comic-Con.
Yeah, and,
You met Harrison.
We met a girl named Harrison.
Sweet Harrison.
Hi, Harrison. And then as we're talking to her, we stopped her, which is funny, because, you know, we encourage people to find us because we had stickers. The Wi-Fi was weird, so we weren't able to really, like, you know, help people find us as much as we would have liked to. And we asked Harrison if we could take a picture of her, because she was Hoth Leia, and the guy with her was Han. And then she goes, wait, are you the Ford cast? I'm Harrison. Like, oh, she won one of our contests. And I was like, well, we have to meet a girl named Harrison at Comic-Con. Like, we absolutely have to meet
you. Yeah, it was awesome.
And then as we're talking, literally a huge Star Wars parade goes past us.
Oh, yeah.
All the great pictures of the people that we met and are on all of our social media. Eventually, we'll probably put some on the website. I got to go to the Star Wars meetup. Well, you went to go wait in line for Carrie forever. I met some great people, including this girl. And I'm sorry, I can't remember your name. I met a lot of different Rays. And she was just telling me how she, like, made the staff out of, like, this molded plastic. It was, like, amazing. And then we were lucky enough to go to the U.S. premiere at the New York Film Festival at Lincoln Center for the documentary that will be on HBO in January called Bright Lights, which was meant to be about Debbie Reynolds, but it's really more about Debbie and her relationship with Carrie.
Yeah, it was really sweet.
It was really, really sweet. What was your impressions of the film?
I love the film a lot. I called my mom and my brother afterwards, and I was telling them how it was strange to me, because that is very, like, much our family, like, obsessions in a way, because my grandpa looked and loved Frank Sinatra. He looked like Frank Sinatra and loved Frank Sinatra.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mom loves, like, older movies, and, like, her favorite movie is Breakfast at Tiffany's, and so she made me watch, like, Singing in the Rain and all the old movies like that. And then like, Star Wars is obviously, like, me and my brothers and our generation. And then I love Billy Lord because of Scream Queens. So it's like my entire family, like, all of us had, it was a bunch of different generations, like, loved that family. And so, for me, it was weird because it was very much like, oh, we, like, I felt, like, very connected to it because I remember growing up watching all of this stuff. And so that's why, like, I was crying through most of it. Yeah, and
bring tissues if you watch it. I was not expecting to cry as much as I did.
Yeah.
I have a very close relationship with my mother. And
I think that's what it is. If you have a close relationship with your mother, you're going to cry.
Yeah, because the focus of the film, and anyone, obviously, who would like to wait, please, you know, turn off the podcast and we'll put a timer.
I don't think, because it's not till January, we're not going to spoil anything.
Yeah.
Just the focus of the film was Debbie Reynolds retiring from performing, but it also is a main focus between Carrie and her mother's
relationship. Yeah, who live next door to each other and have this such a beautiful relationship.
Yeah.
It really, and it goes a little bit about the history of Carrie as well, and there's these amazing home movies.
There's a lot of Debbie Reynolds home movies and stuff.
A lot of Carrie singing. I have not heard her sing that much, ever.
No. But yeah, it was really, I'm trying to be like, I don't want to spoil it, because I want you guys to go and watch it, because it was great.
Oh my god, something you don't want to spoil. I'm shocked.
Most things you can see or have the ability to.
Well, see, I think
this isn't until January.
That's true. But I also think that you can't guess that someone has seen something.
Matt, that kind of thing, I'm like, well, if you're tuning into a... Well, sometimes I spoil things that are not
Harrison Ford. And sometimes I ask you not to spoil them to me, and you still spoil them.
I'm like, whatever, it's been out for 5 years. This, though, I'm like, this, we are very exclusive in having been able to see it.
Yeah,
so I'm like, I really
lucky.
Don't want to.
Yeah. What I also loved about it was we learned a little bit about Todd, too, which I didn't know much about him.
Yeah.
And I just was, I don't know why I wasn't expecting it to be such sort of beautiful relationship between the two of them. And I love Carrie's house. Carrie's house is eclectic.
It's insane, and I love it.
It's like her entire personality.
In a house.
It's amazing.
Oh, it's so insane. I love it. I'm obsessed with it.
And there's then they really let them into some emotional, like, yeah, private moments.
Which is kind of leads into the, so they had a Q&A afterwards.
Yes.
And so it was like a weird Q&A because it's a very emotional movie, so it's like, you don't know what you really want to ask.
Yeah, and it was just to let people know, so it's directed by Alexis Bloom.
And Fisher Stevens.
Fisher Stevens. Fisher Stevens is an actor that some of you may know. I'm not as familiar with Alexis Bloom. I believe she's just a director. And so then Carrie was there. Gary was there. When the movie was over, I didn't realize because I had seen Carrie come in and sit, I thought, in the front. But they put them
Put them in a booth.
They put them in a booth in the top. And so very much like we were at Cannes or something, the movie's done and then this spotlight comes up there.
And she salutes people with a Coca-Cola.
Yeah, because if anyone, we knew, of course, but people watching it may have not known how much Coca-Cola she drinks.
Yeah, she just saluted everyone with a Coca-Cola. I was like, God.
Yeah. So Carrie, Todd was there, and then there was a moderator.
Yes. And so, here's my thing about Q&As. Stop asking inappropriate questions. That's the basic. That's the only thing I have to say.
That's all we're going to say on that?
Yes.
I think that's appropriate to say, yes.
Stop asking. You have no right to know about their personal lives.
They are real people.
They're real people. And whatever happens on Twitter and Tumblr and social media, it's not to be brought up in a Q&A, especially that one. Marissa Tomei was in front of me. Like, it was a bunch of Hollywood people and a select group of fans
and somehow
got in. But like, yeah. we're two of them. Like, I'm not saying,
yeah,
like...
And in most film festivals, you can, if a ticket's available, you know, you can buy it. We upgraded to this when we found it was a Q&A. I didn't realize it was, like, the premiere of it. I mean, there was a red carpet. It was really fun. But I think it's sort of interesting because there's this thing in politics called grouping. This idea that if you are only in a community or you're only in an online forum about that particular kind of politics, your views become bigger and larger than if you were exposed to other things. And I think that's sometimes happens online. Like, it reminded me a lot of, it was a thing at Comic-Con in San Diego where Stephen Moffat kept being referred to as Moffat. Whereas, like, everyone else on stage was referred to by their first name because people online just call him Moffat. And this woman had this shirt with just, like, Moffat across her shirt because many people don't like him very much. We're both huge fans of
Moffat,
his. We love him. But he's a very controversial figure in the fandom. Totally understandable. Everyone has totally the right to do that. No problem. And she kept calling him Moffat, and he goes, how come I don't get a name? You call them Karen and you call them Matt. My name is Steven. And then at the BBC event that I went to, someone said, I have a question for Moffat. And not as sort of upset as he did before, kind of nice, he went, well, my name is Steven. Like, I'm a real person.
Well, because I think it's, with Doctor Who especially, it's because it's the Moffat era. It's not the Steven era. So everyone just refers to him as Moffat. And I understand, like, it's like, no, my name is Steven.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I get why people do it, but I felt like it was a great example of
what I think
happens. It's no one's fault. You just get sort of this insulated sort of pocket, and you're only around people who have similar ideas, and you forget that maybe it's not in a mainstream thing.
Yeah, which also leads into, so I sucked it up and asked a question.
It was an awesome question.
But in the movie, Carrie Fisher says something that, like, it didn't dawn on me that she thinks that way about herself.
I was very surprised myself.
Because she says, I'm not a hero. People see Leia as their hero. I'm just the closest thing they'll ever get to her. And so I was like, that's terrible. That's not true. And so I rose my hand and I said, I have a question, but Carrie, you said something in the movie that broke my heart. You said that people don't, that you're not their hero. Leia is. And I'm like, that's not true at all. You've been my hero for as long as I can remember. And it's not because of Leia or Star Wars or anything like that. It's because of you. And it was so weird because the entire audience started clapping. And I was like, I don't like this. So I just,
this always surprises me.
Why?
Because, well, one, you're an actor.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just surprised that you don't like the attention.
It freaks me out a little. I think it's because it's new.
Like, okay. I mean, I think there are certain things that make me uncomfortable as well. So maybe I understand that. But I don't know. I guess I'm just getting to know you. And I was like, oh, I thought that'd be something you would enjoy.
Oh, I think it's just because it's new. Like, Harrison, who we love, Like, when she was like, oh my god, you guys are, like, heroes to me, can I have a picture? And it, like, my brain short-circuited a little, and I was like, what the fuck is going on? And it, like...
It was so sweet.
Yeah, and Lauren was like, no, like, she's a fan of our podcast. I'm like, you don't understand. My brain was like, what? And, like, I can't comprehend that kind of stuff. It, like, I feel like I could win an Oscar and still not understand. Like, I'd be like, why? What? I don't know what it is. My brain is like, nah.
Well, I think that for any human being, it's going to be a little odd, probably.
But yeah, it's weird. Not that we are any level of famous. It's just strange to me. And so whenever everyone applauded, I, like, freaked out slightly. But it was really great because...
Carrie danced during the Q&A.
We listened to Debbie Reynolds sing.
Yes, at some point, I guess Todd called her and we didn't notice. And then he picked up the phone and put it to the microphone and was like, Debbie's on the line. And I kind of got a little emotional because singing in the rain means a lot to me. I know that, you know, Debbie's not doing very well. She's not able, you know, to travel. It was so moving. And Carrie tried to make a joke and then realized that she had interrupted the applause for her own mother. And then she, like, put her hand over her mouth like, oh, my God, like, for at least 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's fine.
And so then she started playing with the dog instead. Yeah. Like, she played with Gary instead of, she, like, tried, talking.
Yeah, it seems she has, like, an inside joke with her mother about taking all her money.
Yeah. But it was awesome. And literally looking up after I said that to see Carrie Fisher look at me, kind of, like... It was far away, I don't know. But she looked very touched by the fact that I said, you're my hero.
I would be. And I was surprised myself because I see a lot of people who are, like, very, you know, strong fans of hers online, including someone like myself who loves her writing and talks about her as a person a lot. And so I thought that she would know that.
But I feel like it's also a mix up. If you click on those profiles, a lot of them have pictures of Han and Leia. A lot of them are Star Wars fans. So she's, I think she's just...
And we should preface that this was something that she said after a con.
Yes, because a girl said, you're my hero, or I just met my hero, and she says...
But then they took her aside, which was interesting, and interviewed her and said, well, why is she your hero? And she said, because she says what she thinks.
Yeah, it was all about Carrie.
Yeah, it was about Carrie. She just doesn't see that
in
her face.
And even Debbie's talked about it in the movie. I don't want to, like, again, but she says that you basically have to, like... prove to her that she's loved.
Yeah.
Which is so sad to me. And
but that,
so
I think, is also an issue with her being bipolar.
Yes. But that's when I was like, she really doesn't recognize that we're not... But... And I got kind of mad. Going back to the girl with the Q&A brings up a Star Wars thing. After you just watch a movie where this woman is like, I'm not just Leia, but, like, that's what people see me as. And then you have the audacity, sorry, to get up and say... something about Star. I'm like, no.
I don't think it's her fault. I think I don't want to fault anybody.
I'm not. It's not anyone's fault. It's just so frustrating to me because it was so heartbreaking. And then to hear that, that's what fueled me to be like, no, say what you want. Because I'm like, I want her to know. I was like, I, being a 5'2" little girl, love someone who is as strong as she is, who says what she wants, who doesn't let people stop her. I am like so. Like, she's such an inspiration to me. And so for that woman to do that really upset me. And it was, like, that fueled me to be like, no, I'm raising my hand. I'm saying what I want to say. And then I was, like, the second to last question. And I never get chosen for Q&As.
But you also then followed up with a really good question, I thought,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I asked about this.
Debbie Reynolds' costume collection, what their favorite pieces were.
And it was funny because Carrie kind of gave, like, a normal answer. And then Todd, like... I told Lauren, I was like, I feel like he looked at me and was like, this girl's a movie nerd. Because he, like...
Which he is. Like, I feel like Todd
is a movie nerd.
Much more
of a
nerd, yeah. Like, yeah. He gets that from his mom.
But then he, like, looked at me and was like, I'm gonna tell her about Buster Keaton. And I was like, yes, tell me about Buster Keaton.
Yeah, he's just as funny. They're all, like... I think when I was a kid, I thought, oh, well, Carrie Fisher's funny because she's Jewish. Like, you know, growing up in a Jewish family, like, that's a thing. Like, oh, well, you know, a lot of comedians who are Jewish. And it's like, no, she gets it from Debbie Reynolds. Like, they're all funny because of Debbie is funny.
Oh, yeah. Debbie, like, there was a scene she could barely walk and she's cracking jokes. She's, like,
well,
moving down the thing.
This is something interesting, too, that I would like to, I hope without giving anything away, is... I have written a play on George Burns and Gracie Allen, and it reminded me a lot of sort of George Burns, where, like, off stage he might be, like, really slow. You know, he performed till he was about 98.
Yeah.
you know, maybe, you know, not doing everything as quickly, but, you know, as soon as you went from the wings onto the stage, you became fast again, and you were able to do things because of the adrenaline, because you loved it so much.
Yeah.
And that happened with Debbie Reynolds, where she went from the backstage all onto the stage, and she became a completely different person.
Yeah.
She lived for it.
It was awesome.
Or lives for it, I should say.
So we have a review, right?
We have many, many reviews.
But we're going to read out two of them.
You want to read
before
out?
We wrap up.
Yeah, just as a thank you. And please, you know, if you want to review us, go
to... pick one?
Yeah, well, I'll read this one first because I promised this person that I would read it. So this is from B Little Brother on Tumblr. And they wrote, super cute and fun. This is on iTunes. These girls rock. They have one of the most fun podcasts I've listened to in a long time. Thank you. It helps to like Harrison Ford, of course. But even if you aren't fangirls like these two, you will still have fun listening to them talk. Totally worth checking out. Super great for car listening too. Check them out. Thank you so much, B Little Brother. We so appreciate it. Which one do you want to read?
I'm looking at countries. USA, sorry, you guys aren't getting red. But
well, that's actually good because if you're in the U.S., you won't be able to see any of the reviews in other countries. If you're in other countries, you don't get to read the ones from the U.S. So I read a U.S. one. You read a foreign one.
I will. Okay, here's the thing. They're very small, so I'll read them very quickly. Greece from Shospan, I think. I don't know. From Greece wrote, best Harrison Ford podcast around. Rachel and Lauren really know their stuff. You should definitely check it out if you love Harrison and his career. As a fellow fangirl myself, I find this podcast too amusing. It's really nice knowing there are other people who have, and I quote, a huge boner for a 74-year-old man. Wonder who said that?
I'd love to
keep
like
going.
That.
You girls are the best. And then, very quickly, Andrew in Belfast from the UK.
Oh, well, that's on our website.
I love the UK.
That's the quote on our website because he writes for a website who has been very good about promoting us.
Thank you, website in the UK, for most of us.
Astromech
Journal. I love you.
Astromech Journal. Andrew's been also great with us on Twitter.
Yes, and I love you, UK. This podcast is wonderful, urbane, self-assured, and charming, just like Harrison. It really is fun, but also well-informed and insightful. Love it. And the only other different country we got is...
Well, we got Hungary in there.
Kurdalen, that's what I'm doing right now, from Hungary. And it says, so this podcast is just pure awesomeness, informative, but really funny. My fave parts are the personal recaps and stories I can totally relate to. This podcast always makes me smile, and my only concern is that Harrison Ford doesn't have an internal number of movies to talk about. Keep up the good work, and thank you.
Thank you. So if you want to leave a review on iTunes, you can also leave one on Stitcher, but iTunes is great because the more reviews that we get, the more iTunes will promote us, the more people can listen to the show. Just be sure to do a nickname under your profile, or it may not work.
Be clever with your nicknames.
Yeah.
Just because I want them.
As I mentioned, we have a website now because we set up for Comic-Con, so definitely check us out. We have an archive. We have all of our sponsors on there. To win things, and rules with, you know, we have our seasonal contest. We also have our contests, you know, that we do once a week, for smaller stuff or whatever, you know, movie that we're doing on all the social media. So follow us everywhere. So it's www.thefordcastpodcast.com. I know it's not really creative.
Not creative
no.
at all.
We're on Twitter at The Fordcast PC. We're on Instagram, Tumblr, and Facebook at The Fordcast Podcast. You can email us if you want to at thefordcastpodcast@gmail.com. And speaking of contests, we are going to announce the winner of our fall contest who gets, sorry, the summer contest, who gets the big bag of swag for Harrison Ford's birthday, so including some extra things like free samples and...
Birthday, July.
It was July, yeah. Well, it was the summer contest, so
we had to pre-record a bunch.
Yeah, so I figured that if it was a summer contest, then it should be sort of theme related. And since his birthday was in the summer, I made a bag of swag of Harrison. So, like for the fall contest, we have two amazing posters from RadRetroMoviePosters.com that you can choose from. You don't get both. So it's either Blade Runner or Raiders of the Lost Ark. You can take a look at the link on our website under Enter Contest. And he's an amazing designer, and he takes them and makes them sort of look like 1940s retro posters. It's really,
awesome.
Really cool. Also some news. Harrison is going to be inducted November 30th in the California Hall of Fame along with George Takei.
George!
And if you want to win a set trip and a free trip and apartment.
You want to win an apartment?
I'm not reading this right. You can get flown to Budapest to go to the set of Blade Runner, which now has a title, which is Blade Runner 2049. You'll be staying in a 4-star hotel, not an apartment. Oh God, Comic-Con killed me. And it's at is that Omaze.com, which is a place,
which is the same one that did the you could talk to Harrison Ford.
Yeah, they do a lot of like sort of once in a lifetime things.
You could walk on roll in Star Trek. They do that kind of stuff all the
time. They're really great. So they do once in a lifetime experiences that benefit charitable causes, and you can there are 3 different causes that this goes to, and at different levels you get different entries, and you also can get extra special prizes, including an autographed poster. But that's a lot of money. So good luck to you on that. I've mentioned Beltway Banthas. If you miss us, please check us out. We talked about Harrison Ford's wonderful activism. Let's see. Is that everything else? Check our website, blah, blah, blah. Oh, some things that I didn't mention that I thought were interesting was on the set of Witness, one of the extras made a joke about Indiana Suttonfuss and the Temple of Tobacco. And Harrison made shirts and gave them out to everybody as, like, parting gifts.
How sweet.
And the Amish were not very happy with the film. They thought it was a mockery, although they probably didn't see it. And they tried to protest the film. And they purposely kept Kelly McGillis off the poster because they were afraid they might offend people with her in her garb on there. Oh, and it was at Cannes, but they refused to let it compete. I don't know why. I think because they thought it wasn't going to be, like, again, Harrison Ford had a lot of backlash because people were expecting him to not be a good actor. To just be Harrison Ford and
Han Solo. What a world!
So, in 2 weeks, we're doing The Mosquito Coast, also directed by Peter Weir.
Which my dear friend Emma will be on.
Yeah,
because she loves Mosquito Coast.
I've never seen it, so I'm super excited.
Me either, I'm excited, but Emma, it's just so funny that sweet baby Emma is like, I love Mosquito Coast.
Well, I know that you disagree, but I believe on Inside the Actors Studio, he said that this is his favorite movie. It's probably the
what
most
do you mean
personal.
I disagree?
You said you didn't think it was his favorite movie.
No, I didn't.
I swear you said that.
I've never said I don't think it was his favorite movie. I said it's not my favorite movie.
Oh, okay.
Granted, I've never seen it.
Because I put it on our list as Ford's favorite, and I thought you went, oh, I don't think that's correct.
I am the last person who'll be like, I believe that information is wrong, because I don't know shit. I'm like, nah, maybe. Who knows?
But we still love you.
Yeah, I know nothing. I'm like Jon Snow.
So definitely check out our website. We now will have show notes for every episode in the archives. So anything that we talk about, like links, you know, if you want to go back and look at some episodes that you've already listened to, you can see everything that we talk about so that you can read more about it, videos, links to our columns.
Mm-hmm.
You want to remind people about The Culturist?
Yeah, if you go to culturist.com and just search R. Leishman, I write a bunch of stuff on there.
And it's also linked under her bio on our website.
Yeah, it's just pop culture stuff, and I'm really upset because someone beat me to we did this post that was like, celebrities we want to keep in a vault to, like, keep alive. We did it right after Gene Wilder died. And someone beat me to writing Harrison Ford.
Oh, no.
And I was like, no. And I think I put Idris Elba and Chris Pine. Like, I think that's who I ended up doing.
All the people
I can't
to
remember.
Do it, it should be us. Well, you.
I know. I was like, I got beaten.
Oh, I had all these quotes about him in the Oscars. Oh, well.
Oh, well.
Send us an email, send us a tweet, send us anything that you think would be interesting for the show or your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
We would love to hear from you. It was so great meeting everybody at Comic-Con because of that.
Yeah, leave us.
See you in 2 weeks with Mosquito Coast.
Bye.
Bye.